Well, hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. Alongside me, the one and only, the stat man, Mr. Ben Clark. No Marcel Mathis this week. We are hoping that Mark Telling might be able to jump on shortly. He's got prior commitments. Absolute. I mean, what sort of priorities do these people have, Ben? Unbelievable.
No idea. I think Marcel's just bored of talking to you with commentary. He's just finding excuses not to come on the podcast. He's like, I've already talked about this race. As I said to you earlier, he's such a big TV star now. If you don't go through his agent, he's not available.
Yeah. He's far too big time. He's like, well, he's just replaced. He can only talk so much. And he's replaced the pod with the TV. So
he's used his word count for the week already, unfortunately. Yeah.
But we have got, it might be a shortened pod, I guess, this week. We've only got two races to talk about. A real shame that the races over in Val di Fassa were cancelled for the women. The two Super Gs were snowed out, I think it's probably fair to say. It looked like they had so much snow, just wasn't safe, wasn't going to be a goodie. Unfortunately, it was cancelled. I sort of teed us up a little bit to start talking about Ragnhild Møvenk. She announced her retirement off the back of those cancellations, not because of the cancellations, but just coincided with that trip. And Ben and I were just looking through some of her stats before we came on. She's had 242 World Cup starts, 14 podiums, four wins, one in a downhill, two in Super G, and one in GS. Pyeongchang 2018 Olympic Games. Downhill silver medalist, GS silver medalist, World Championships in RA 2019. She was third in the Alpine combined. I don't remember ever seeing her put slalom skis on. And then in 2023, last year in Courchevel, she was third in the GS. Ben, we were talking about it. I thought she'd won quite a lot more than that. It seems like she's been sort of a major player for such a long time. Not that that's not good. That's obviously very good. But I don't know. I just kind of assumed that it was more.
Yeah, I think similarly, both thought she'd had more than the four victories she did have on the World Cup tour, especially in the speed events, when you think that's not necessarily where Schifrin's been spending all of her time throughout her career. But at the same time, she is one of those people. If you go back and listen to enough of her episodes, I'm fairly sure we've both picked her a bunch of times in those speed events. So she's someone who's always had the raw speed. Obviously, in more recent years, she's had some injuries that have taken quite a lot of time off the hill to get back from. But the fact that even last year, being in a medalist in the World Champ, shows that it's not like been a decline by any stretch. So she's obviously decided now's her time to finish up at the end of the season. But like you said, 242 World Cups, and again in predominantly speed with a few GSs thrown in, that's a really impressively, I guess, amount of work to put in through your career.
I do. The only thing I think is a bit strange is it's this year. I don't know why. I feel like if you're going to announce your retirement, this, I don't know, it seems like there's no major champs in this year. So it kind of feels like, I don't know, you're very close to 2020, the World Champs next year, so 2025, in Saalbach, and then you're very close to the Games. Sort of feels weird that you wouldn't have called it at the end of last year when it's only World Cups in this year to go, but maybe World Champs and stuff. Or she just had enough. Maybe too feels like it's too close to injuries or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I haven't looked at too many of the comments other than the initial kind of social media post that she'd put out, but it may well come out that she thought she'd have that World Champs and Olympic cycle in her, and throughout this season has just felt the hunger not really be there. Obviously, it's been a pretty tough season for everyone with the amount of cancellations as we discussed the other week, the injuries that have happened to a lot of people. And perhaps just as the season's gone on, she just felt, you know what, another 2 years of this, I've enjoyed my time. I don't fancy going for it. Like you said, if she'd already thought about it and was planning it to be the end of this year, it is a strange year with nothing else on, so close to major championships and the next Olympics. But it could just be, like I said, one of those things where as the years progress, she's just felt, you know what, I don't think I've got another 2 years of this in me.
Yeah, I think sometimes when it comes to being done, I think it's over when it's over. Do you know what I mean? I think when you lose the love or the desire or combination of the two of them or whatever, I think it, if that's where you've come to, if that's where you end up, and obviously then making your, you can't, if you don't love it or you felt like you've sort of got to a point where you want to finish. I don't, you can't bounce back from that, I don't think. Then if you'd start, you know, those people that keep going when they think, oh, maybe I should, maybe I'm going to retire, and then you end up doing something silly, especially being a speed racer or predominantly a speed racer.
I think provided you're enjoying your racing and it's what you want to do, then go for it. You know, what we talked about, the likes of Johan Clary and those guys that go on into their, 40, late 30s, early 40s. But you could see they enjoyed it even when they weren't necessarily, getting podiums. They still loved racing, and that's one thing we've both said about Mo Winkle over the years, is she's one of the racers, a bit like Brignone. She just looks like she's always having the best time ever when she's racing. Like she seems like one of those people who just really loves her job. So if she's calling it a day, I think it's going to be a loss for the World Cup tour, because she does seem like one of the personalities on the tour that people really enjoy being around. Obviously, no one's going to announce their retirement and have a load of people slack them off, but she's not been
Yeah,
short
good
of people
riddance. Get
having
out of here. Leave us all alone.
She's not been short of people saying, that she is a great person to be around, and that, that's obviously a loss for her because she is always does appear to be smiling and happy when she's racing. So maybe we'll see her in the media or something. Maybe she'll have a podcast then.
Maybe. Well, we should come. You know, we're always looking for
Co-hosts
permanent.
for when Marcel's not
On
with us.
holiday. Or too busy for us. The how did you get on with your picks this week, Ben?
Well, I definitely would have got both the women's ones right if they'd run the races, that's for sure.
Are you getting 10 points for those, are
But as I mean, Gareth, if you're out there, help me out. I'll need all the help I can get.
you?
Well, we said before we started recording, it's kind of hard to pick up any points in certainly in the men's GS when we kind of tell ourselves we can't pick Marco Odebak because it's too predictable. I think I picked Mo Farah in the slalom, so I got 5 points of the available 10. He didn't do it for me in the GS, man. I think that was maybe a bit more of a one-off his race before.
Well, the people that are going very well. So what have we've only got this coming weekend, the following weekend, and then we start with finals basis. So we've got like a month to go, sort of 3 weekends as it were. And Jesse Hansen is tied at the top of the table with Tom Hiscott. That was before actually Aspen, before Palisades, because we haven't quite had a chance for Gareth to update that yet. So those two are neck and neck. Ryan Ballantyne just a couple of points behind there. Gareth Harvey, who's doing the points, he's only in fifth, alongside Jamie Aldridge, who's like the three-time winner. So Gareth's probably giving himself extra points instead of giving us extra points, which I don't think is very fair.
I'm sure he's a man of incredible integrity and would never do such things. But if you can be swayed by bribery, Gareth, let me know and I will send some bribes your way. But get me in front of Marcel before the end of the season.
I cannot be beaten by Marcel yet again. The thing is, you know that he's gonna type in when we ask him who his picks are. He's gonna type into our little WhatsApp group calling Odomat, isn't he? You just know it. He thinks he's gonna get away with it, but we're wise to him now.
The best way around it is don't say anything until the races are over and go, oh, Marcel, you didn't put your picks in. That's a shame. The end. Nil point.
Well, that's what we normally get anyway. The men were racing in Palisades Tahoe, and it was proper wintry conditions, especially in the GS. The first runs of both days actually looked really good. Second runs got a little bit warmer throughout the sort of quickly warming snow conditions, but the first couple of runs were great. Odomat yet again on top, making it 7 from 7 this season, 10 on the bounce, including the back end of last year. But he only won by 12 hundredths of a second over Henrik Kristoffersen, who really, really did look like he was absolutely flying. River Radamus, that's like Hollywood script fairy tales, first ever podium, and it's on American snow in front of a decent American crowd. Really, really pleased for him. And I hope that it's going to be something that he's going to be able to use to kick on from. The points that he scored in speed, in Super G, the points that he scored in slalom as well. You kind of feel like what a season, and hopefully this is his breakthrough season, because we've expected a lot since his World Junior Champ success. And I don't know whether he might have lost his way or whatever it was, but that transition from World Junior Champs and talk of a lot of promise has seemed to have taken a little bit of time. Not that there's anything wrong with that, and most, for a lot of people, that is the way that it ends up going. But I'm really pleased that he's finally, he's still in his early 20s, but do you know what I mean? I'm pleased that he's now here with a World Cup podium, and I really hope that that is the kick on from him, because it would be cool to see the US team with something to shout about on the men's side on a more consistent basis, maybe than Bennett. No disrespect to Bennett. He's obviously incredibly quick, but the conditions have to be really right for him to be quick. Whereas I think River has got a skill set that can feature on most of the GSs on the World Cup tour. Tumler came close in third. Gino Kvyatsel, a bit better from him in fifth. And then the Austrians had an okay day, but a great day for Haase, who was in seventh for the Austrian team, and then Feller in eighth. Nothing really to lose. He just didn't look like he quite got onto it. We always talk about he's not training GS, and it's a bit of a release for him, and any sort of results he picks up are. Well, like a bonus almost, you know, it's not something that he's really keyed in yet. Doesn't do any training in the discipline because he's back, really. Ben, what did you make of the GS, bud?
I thought it was brilliant. Like you said about River is right. I think we've probably been a little bit spoilt with Odomat going straight from, being an amazing junior to just dominating the World Cup tour, and then Shiffrin being rolling up and winning World Cups when she was 16, and just expecting that kind of level of brilliance to just sustain itself. We've said a few times there've been glimpses of speed from River, but as with a lot of racers, finishing and consistency has been a big thing we've been saying. Like you said, just finding his feet a little bit in terms of how hard to push, when to push, and he seems like the kind of guy who's got that attitude of laying it all on the line every. And people have to sometimes that well for them really get it dialed in on the World Cup tour. And like you said, it was an absolutely incredible performance. Like you said, kind of fairy tale stuff. I was getting a little bit worried on that second run that he might not be able to hold on to it. Ended up being, I think, it was like 19th fastest on the second run. So I was holding my breath as he came down saying,
Well, he
please,
talked.
please hold on, because
Yeah, well, he
he's
talked.
what you really want it for him.
Yeah, exactly. He talked between his runs, didn't he, about not being nervous? And I was thinking about it on comms. I'm like, is that bravado, or was he really not nervous? Because there's nothing wrong.
I think he was trying to talk himself into not being nervous more than anything else. Like if you say I'm nervous out loud, it's got far more chance of messing with you than if you constantly tell yourself you're not nervous. Even if there's parts of your brain that say that's stupid, of course you're nervous. Like you could see what it meant to him in the end. He's in tears and stuff, and that's brilliant. And we've said a bunch of times in the last few weeks, it's great when you see that kind of emotion from people. Whether it's their first top 10, their first top five, their first podium, or in Radamus's case, a podium in front of your home fans, which is something that we've talked about before. The Americans don't have as many chances to achieve because we're there so rarely in comparison to the European countries. It was like an absolute fairy tale. But one of the other big takeaways was Kristoffersen looking like Pete Kristoffersen in GS, and like you said, pushed Odermatt all of the way. I mean, they weren't the longest GSs, like 106 and 105, but they certainly felt long because you've kind of got the bits of flats at the start, and then the fall away and the rollers, and you like there's a lot to take in on that hill, and I think you definitely feel the full minute five, minute six of it, in your legs. There wasn't, I think it was Manny Feller on the first run. He was number one. He got to the end, and I just I didn't look like he attacked at any point on that run, just because he didn't know how much he could push or when, because he didn't want to run out of juice. So he just kind of skied the whole first run
I think when
rather than
you've got
raced it.
pushed when you got pushed that hard on the flats at the bottom, and it was relatively long flats as well, wasn't it? That, like you say, that bottom bit where that is a lot of pressure on your legs. And I know that these guys are athletes, and I also know that they moan a lot for being tired. But I think that is one of those where you're really pumping the legs on the flats to try and create and help build slash maintain like speed and line and all that sort of stuff in the right place.
And a lot of people would we tr almost go in a gate too long on that top flat. The amount of people that were getting caught out by that first fall away and overshooting it because they were like, I'm going fast, got to keep making speed. And then the people that skied it the best, obviously. took their foot off the accelerator just to get that fall away first roller in the shade, right? And those kind of things. I think you and Marcel talked about it on commentary that the setter for the second run made it an awful lot easier in terms of taking away the kind of the, I guess, the biggest blind
Gamble.
spot on that corner. But it's, yeah, that people looked exhausted racing both runs. But I thought it was really, I think it looks like a really fun hill. Like you said, exhausting and tiring, especially with the flats at the top and the bottom. But it's got so much other stuff to take in that it looked really, really cool to race on.
Yeah, I think especially from a GS perspective, I have to admit, I don't love it from a slalom perspective, but I do enjoy it from a GS perspective. We'll get onto that a little bit later on, I think. But yeah, Odermatt, I mean, we are running out of superlatives, and it's only really been pushed twice this season, once by Odermatt, once on the first in Alta Badia, wasn't it, where he won by a tight margin over Zubcic. But Kristoffersen really did look like he was pushing it. And I think Odermatt really knew that he was in a battle that first day. He really knew that he was going to have to risk. And but we talked about just before we started recording that that is Odermatt's almost like his superpower, isn't it? Being able to figure out and know exactly what's going on and try and be, and somehow he's able to like figure out where he's at in relation to everybody else. Obviously he can't, but it feels that way, that he knows just the right places and just the right amount to push when other people have a really good run.
Yeah, it's like he's in his own head, as well as taking in the course that he's racing and how ridiculously difficult it is, and getting his
Yeah.
line and angles exactly right. He's almost got, his next nearest competition superimposed on his own run in his mind, so he can see, like
Yeah,
when
one of
they
those
do the
shadow layovers.
where they have the layered races, where they're showing the other person, two people racing on top of each other. He's just got that in his head, and he goes, "I'll probably need to turn it on for the next four gates and just
Yeah.
get my shadow just in front of Kristoffersen's." But it is, and we've talked about it with Schifrin in the past. Hers is more being able to manage the ridiculous lead she's built up on the first run and have just the right amount of effort on the second run, not that, or just the right amount of risk, probably is the right way of describing it, because she's still trying very hard. But so that no one ever quite gets within arm's reach of her. Odermatt's version of that is different, but it is still an incredible skill to be able to do. And you might ask him about it and says, "No, I've got no idea how fast anyone else is going. It just looks like that to us, the way he skis and how close people occasionally get." But there seem to be times in runs where his splits are down, and he's when everyone else is dropping off from that point, he'll find speed when he needs it, and that is the thing that makes him incredible. I think I might have said it last week, but I'll say it again. Do you think he can go the full season unbeaten in GS?
I mean, yeah.
Will World Cup finals be too busy, because the GS normally comes towards the end, so we'll have done downhill training
Yeah,
runs
but
and
this year,
downhill and Super G.
it's much more spread out. It's much more spread out. So,
Is it a long schedule?
yeah. So normally they would bang them all out, men's and women's, within like 5 days. And the downhills would be on a Tuesday. We'd race Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, basically. Whereas this year we're not doing that, so we're racing the
Oh, the GS was
weekend.
at the start. Okay.
Yeah, so you're racing the weekend, and then there's, I think, downhill trainings, and then I can't remember the exact layout yet, and we'll talk about that lower down, but it's not the condensed program it used to be. They've spread it out again because of, and that's the thing. Like, I know sometimes it sounds like we bash Fizz, but actually, like, they do listen for some, and they do make changes for some things. You know, the hectic schedule at the end where they're smashing everybody in at one go, the athletes didn't like it, so they've gone, right, well, it's actually better if we spread it out slightly. It's not necessarily as good for the resorts because they've got to keep stuff closed, but it's better for the athletes and it's better for TV, which is better for the athletes ultimately anyway. And they've spread it out a little bit, which I think is, which ultimately is, yes, better. You're going to get more viewers at the weekend, and it's viewers, isn't it? Because it's about trying to expand ski racing. You're going to get more viewers at the weekend, or you're going to get more viewers on a Tuesday morning. Of course, you're going to get it more at the weekend. So that's a good thing.
No, that made sense. That made sense. We touched on it a little bit before we started recording as well, but we said McGrath had a bit of a mare in the GS, but it kind of reflected in his whole weekend. Ended up being scraping into the second run in the first place. Was it to 28th? after the first run, and then laid down an absolute monster on the second
He
run.
moved up like 14 or 16 places or something, didn't
Oh
he?
yeah, he ended up 13th, but the fastest second run. It was quite a few tenths quicker than Odomat in the end on that second run, which goes to show just the level of skiing that he's capable of. And I think he did I think a social media post as well saying, thank God for second runs. But he needs to find something. He had some issues earlier in the year where he had good first runs and was messing up second runs, and now he's messing up first runs and smashing second runs. So he just needs to find that middle ground.
Do you think that he's at that stage, and we spoke about it a lot of times before, do you think he's just victim of charging slight and pushing slightly too hard? You know, he came very close to those two wins earlier on in the year in Wengen, and was it Adelboden where he was really close? I think it was that week, that sort of back-to-back weekends where we got those 2 seconds in slalom. And do you think that because he was so close, he was like 200s and 1200s, I think, or something like that. Do you think he's just gone, I'm, you know, just so desperate to win, I'm just got to, you know, go a little bit crazy and just throw everything away and just charge, rather than concentrate a little bit on his technique, which brought him those seconds? Do you think he's almost victim of doing well there and not quite getting it and then pushing too hard, if you see what I mean?
Maybe, and I think he's probably suffering a little bit from what we've talked about before with some other racers where he's lost his kind of best mate on the tour in terms of Bratton, and they've also kind of lost the team leader of Kilder. Kristoffersen's always been kind of doing his own thing, but it
Yeah,
now means that
it's a good point.
everyone's looking at McGrath as saying, okay, you're the guy now.
Yeah.
And we talked about it for years with the likes of Schwartz and Feller when Hirscher retired. They kind of struggled to live up to that mantle, and obviously now they've kind of settled into the fact that there's not actually a dominant force anymore, and maybe McGrath needs to just relax a little bit. He still looks like he's having fun, but he also does look like he's really kind of in his head at the moment and still having fun. But I hope he gets to that position where, like you said, he's just ski the way you ski. Don't think too much about how hard you have to push to beat Odomat, because as Odomat shown, no one can work that out. Worry about your ski and what works for you,
Yeah,
and just be the fastest you can be.
I think you made a really good point about the team dynamic, actually, because the Norwegians have forever, and for all of McGrath's experience and racing experience, had like a sort of senior member, a very experienced World Cup winner that is very mature, you know, with the likes of Svindal, Jansrud, and then Kilder, really. And so now, on the tech side, if you take Kristoffersen out, who does so fly solo with his own program, but also integrates a bit into the team, but also isn't just with the team, you know, there aren't those big play there aren't the big names, there aren't the senior guys, as you would say, on the team. You've got McGrath, Steen Olsen, Haugen. And I can't think of anybody else that's sort of that's up there from the Norwegian perspective. So yeah, I wonder if it's, you know, maybe just not having that calming chat at the night before, the morning at breakfast, or between runs, or anything, like to go, you know, I know that you want this, we know that you're good enough. And I'm sure they would have those sorts of things. I'm sure, like as a youngster, I mean, I did it, and obviously I wasn't anywhere near that level, but it will be the same within the teams that you do look up to your older teammates who have been there and done that, and are sort of much more experienced than you, just for, even if it's just a kind word in passing, can actually have quite a big effect. And I think you make a very, very valid point.
Yeah, that and also just, last year Bratton won the Slalom Globe. So he had, would have had a lot of the press before every race. He would have been the person, if it wasn't Kilder, everyone was wanting to talk to. And with other people being injured and being out of the limelight, McGrath is the one that, all of the when if someone wants to speak to a Norwegian at the race, they're going to go to him at the moment. And possibly that's just not necessarily distracting him, but just it's just more demands on your time, whereas previously he might have just jumped in the background of Bratton's interview, pulled a silly face and gone off and gone about his business. That
Worn
it
a
just
fella moustache t-shirt and And
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a process every kind of World Cup racer goes through. If they've broken onto the scene young, they kind of have that period where they turn up. They don't know what makes them fast, but they're hilariously fast. They're having fun with their mates. It's the best time of your life. And then all of a sudden it's your job. And you're like, okay, how do I do this as my job? And how do I win every week and still have fun and, make a load of money?
You're talking a lot of sense this week, Ben. I don't know what you've been doing today, mate, because
It's clearly been drinking too much.
your brain's on fire, mate. Absolutely on
Yeah.
fire. But the GS, I think, was a huge success. Yes, I think Odomat could easily win the next four. We got four races. We got four more GSs. Couple in Aspen, one in Kranska, and then one at World Cup Finals. And he is, because he's that sort of guy, he will be determined, more determined, because I think he's quite interested in the records. Like, I know that he doesn't necessarily say it, but I think he likes being the best and likes being, as good as he is. Because I think we saw that World Cup Finals last year. Do you remember, what was he like, seventh in the downhill, or so he was miles off in one of them, the penultimate race of the thing, and you're like, well, he's wrapped everything else up, he doesn't need to do anything, he's got the title, he's got all this sort of stuff. And then he just was like, no, well, I did so bad yesterday that I wanted to prove to myself and just put on a show because I'm who I am. And he went and won the Super G the very next that next day, after, for no reason, because he'd already won the title, he'd already won both globes, the small globe and the big globe. And you're like, so yeah, I think he's really going to be pushing, and it'll mean a lot to him to go undefeated. So I think he will be on a mission. I don't think he's going to take his foot off the gas in any shape or form.
You can not be too obsessed with records and still want to win every race in a season and know that it will have you go down in some kind of history if you do it. I'd like to see him try it, not necessarily at the expense of anything. Obviously, if he's feeling exhausted or he's got picks up an injury and races at GS just to try and get the record, even if he's still injured. Obviously, don't put yourself in that kind of trouble. But if he's firing on all cylinders the rest of the season, go for it. It would be something amazing for us to talk about. It is something that would go down in history. And that level of dominance, you don't get to see. I say you don't get to see very often. We get to see it all the time because Shiffrin's racing, and she is equally as dominant. But yeah, it would be incredible to see if he could. I know we've still got four. Well, we'll see how this weekend pans out, and we can have this discussion next week if he wins the two this weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's North American snow. He's sort of taken that in his stride, and just whether it's just, I think the only thing is going to be depending on how hungover he is. That's why I feel like he talks about looking forward to going out and having a few celebrations after the win. So that might, he just can't do that on Friday into Saturday.
Just think of the party at the end of winning an entire season's worth of GS races. That's the party you want to go to.
Well, we had a cracking day on the GS skis, and in slalom didn't disappoint. Manu Fella, what an unbelievable set of stones that man's got on him. I just love the way that, that second run, he really, really brutally charged it in that tricky course. Clément Noël, second again, 0.28 back. Strasser, 0.38 back. Haugen, two unnies off the podium in fourth. Jakobsen, only 0.05 off the podium in fifth, who had a very, very good day again. And Alex Vanatzer, yes, a little bit further away, 0.85 off, but he was in sixth, riding a save. A very big save on that second run. Didn't quite, it looked like he was going much, much harder on that second run than he did on the first, which obviously was what we wanted to see, but just didn't quite get to grips with the. I think the snow, warmed up slightly, which doesn't play into Dave's hand, but just, right at the bottom, big mistake, big save, and to still get through the finish line. Yes, 24th, but those points could be valuable come the end of the season for season-long standing. So DNF for Major, which was a shame. Those eagle-eyed of you will have seen all the Swiss wearing black armbands, and it was to do with Wendy Holdener's brother, Kevin, who unfortunately lost his battle with cancer, only 34 years old, and he'd been battling for 14 years. And so, yeah, very, very, very sad, and a nice way for the Swiss team to pay a bit of homage to their teammate, and well, as somebody that I'm sure that they will have known quite well, because he was being Wendy's manager, he would have been around the scene quite a lot. So even if they didn't know him through racing, I don't know if he did any racing through his teens. I'm sure he did, but I think he, yeah, was missing. It was a lovely touch, a nice touch from the team, just as a sort of, yeah, we're with you, Wendy, which I think was really good. But the racing itself, I really enjoyed the racing. I thought it was some cracking courses. I do have to admit, sorry, American fans, don't shoot me down. Don't try and get me cancelled. I don't love that as a slalom hill. I don't think there's enough in it. I mean, the out of the gate is steep for a couple of turns. Then those fall away gates. Yes, that brings it quite interesting. But then you've got about 25 seconds on pretty flat course with not loads going on. I mean, yeah, I didn't love it. I don't know if there's another piece. I've never skied there, so I don't know. I don't know if there's another piece there, or if they can do anything, or maybe they don't care. Maybe I'm talking absolute rubbish, which is quite easily the case. But yeah, for me, didn't love the piece.
I thought it was fine, but I think you touched on it there, is that the setters made it interesting. And I think that's something that needs to take place on the World Cup tour, because there are some hills that don't have everything. So then the setters need to give it
Yeah.
something extra. You can't have easy courses on easy hills, because then it is just a push-a-thon. So I thought the setters did really well. They put enough into it so that you didn't notice, or certainly I didn't notice as much as you did. I was thinking, well, watching the GS, where's the slalom going to start? How much flat is there going to be? And like you said, there is a fairly big chunk of it that's, it's not flat, but it's also not, steep, gnarly, icy, Val d'Isere chaos either. But I think you need a kind of bit of everything on the tour. I don't want to talk too much trash on him. I do that, save that for the women's super G's. But I quite liked Levy as a men's slalom hill, and that's not overly challenging. It's got a lot of
True.
undulations in it, but I like the way that the setters can use it if they use those undulations right. And I think you hit it, that there was enough in those courses. The fallaways were used well. They put challenging turns on the fallaway, so you weren't just cruising down them. And we saw quite a few people get caught out by those fallaways. And I think there was some good selling in the transitions from the steep to the flat, so that, unfortunately, as we saw with some of the guys, you have to get those turns right. And if you're greedy trying to get speed going onto the flat, you can mess up your whole run on there.
Yeah, I think it plays a bit more of a tactical edge, doesn't it, for the races? And I think it brings out that side, which, yes, maybe you're right. Maybe not every race needs to, maybe there is place for that sort of, inverted commas, easier piece.
But like I said, like the setters need to do their part. If they set a boring course, then that race could have been rubbish. But it was set really well, so the racing was, like you said, was really good. And
Very enjoyable. I did, that was from a viewer's perspective, and I know that when I'm working on it, it's slightly different, maybe. But I did enjoy. I really enjoyed commentating on that race, because there was a lot to talk about. There was a lot going on. That it was nice, fine margins. There were plenty stories in the piste and the set and the thing as a whole to make it a very interesting and an enjoyable race, I think. But yeah, I take your point. I just think. I just didn't love the bottom bit, but I think the rest of it is really good. But you're right. I think especially that second run, I really enjoy. We take the piss out of some of these crazy sets and it being a typical Croatian course set. But I think it played really well. That weird sort of banana into sort of into that hairpin that you had to control the speed around the banana. You couldn't just go skiing straight through gung ho and expect to make the exit, because it just wasn't possible. So it brings in a real tactical edge to it, even on the steeper part. And then yeah, coming to the bottom, that fall away. Unfortunately, yeah, Billy Major, from a British perspective, didn't quite nail that and didn't have the commitment to his outside ski, and went down. But and then there was a couple of really condensed, really short turns right to, in that sort of middle flat at the finish, which again meant that you really had to look ahead and do a bit more planning, which again, yeah, I guess maybe plays into a slightly different skill set. Strasser's first run was unbelievable, wasn't it? I mean, that guy on the first run, 4 tenths quicker than Clément Noël was pretty epic.
He's so smooth sometimes. I don't know what it is. Every now, like Adelboden seems to bring it out of him. We've seen him be great there a bunch of times, but just every now and then he puts one of those runs down. You're like, where is this all of the time? Like he's
Yeah.
a fairly consistent ski racer in terms of like he's always there or thereabouts. But when he turns it on, you're like, whoa, where's that the rest of the time? And it was really good skiing on that first run, and I wasn't sure. If Manny would be able to get that back,
Well, I just
or
think
Clément Noël for that matter.
there's so much for Manny to lose. He was leading the standings by 140, wasn't he, at that stage, I
Yeah, I
think.
think that was it. And
About,
Strasser was the next nearest person.
yeah,
So
so
if you ski out trying to put the pressure on
it's
and
100
then he
points,
gets
and it's down
100
to
points,
40. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's a massive swing. But if you play it too safe, you could have ended up like 10th or something and picking up,
the margins and
half the
so on are so
points.
tight.
Yeah. So it was really, really impressive from Manny, like you said, on that second run. But Strasser, I couldn't quite work out what was going on in his second run. Obviously that banana you mentioned at the top, people were going wider and wider on, and unfortunately from the camera angle on telly, you couldn't see it, but it looked like it was quite cut up. So I think you see how wide Manny went through that. He went really wide on the first gate of the banana,
Yeah.
and I was wondering like, oh, has he overshot the turn? But it was like, oh no, he's tactically just basically gone around the outside of the rut, because
Yeah.
it looked like it was just messing with people's rhythm so much for the next couple of gates that he'd obviously made the decision it was going to be quicker to take a slower line and just get back into the rhythm quicker than trying to hold on to it for a couple more turns.
Yeah, because you almost had to sort of, make a conscious decision and effort to break coming round there, because the it was a banana that didn't really need to be a banana because of the space that was there into that really short hairpin. So a lot of racers were coming around and sort of double turning through it, or trying to, like, skid their way round, and then didn't find the timing into that hairpin. Then all of a sudden they were trying to bang through pressure and those, like, left right into in and out of that hairpin, and you're like, just didn't look right. But fella just came round, gave himself so much more room, and then was late, sort of later coming through, which then meant the rhythm of that next hairpin was really good. I just thought, again, it was, hit for him to put that much on the line. And we always talk about it as well. Like, I mean, you slacken off too much, you make silly mistakes, and you find yourself out, or skiing into 15th, 20th position. And when you do that, you pick up so little points anyway, because it drops off so quickly, 100 points there, and then all of a sudden 15th is like 20 points. And you're like, well, it's almost po it's not pointless. By design, it's not point.
Literally.
It's by design not pointless. But I love that. I really admire the way that he was just like, nah. I mean, he didn't even care that he was in third. He was like, this is all, again, it looked all or bust. Haugen's run I thought was really good. Felt a bit sorry for him that he didn't manage to get it through to the podium. Same with Jakobsen as well, actually. That second run from Jakobsen was pretty epic. Noel is all of a sudden becoming more consistent, which is what we've been
Exactly. I
talking
mean, bear
about.
in mind it was the contentious discussion of if he straddled right in like the last race. Not
Yeah, but that
overly
one,
consistent.
that one's irrelevant at this point, because even all the stats and stuff was leading after the first run in Bansko. You're like, I don't think it would have been if we'd actually finished running the race. But I think, I don't know whether he's changed something fundamentally to become more consistent through the latter two thirds of this season, or whether he's, just managing to finish more. But
Yeah, it's a weird one. He still
looks
looks
better, doesn't it?
fast at times, but also there are times where I think on the second run you could see a little bit. He was just like, I really want to win, but I also really don't want to mess this up.
Yeah,
Like you could see, like
yeah,
he'd have like 10 gates where he'd be like, oh, he's going for it, and then the next 10 gates he'd be like, oh no, he just wants to put it in the finish. It seems like he's having an internal argument the whole
yeah.
way down the run.
He's like, charges it. He's like, yeah, this is going really well. He's like, oh yeah, but if it goes this well, then maybe it won't go this well for the next bit. So I've taken the risk already. I don't want to do it the whole way down.
There's probably a feeling he has in a turn that's now become like a trigger point for back off, because he's just like, oh no, wait, this involves my feet being above my head in about 2 gates time if I keep doing this. And I've certainly had that in periods, obviously a much slower version of that, but there were certain things in my skin at times where you'd be like, oh, if I keep doing this, I'm in big trouble. I need to stop right now and fix this problem. I've got two gates to get back on the front of my boots, or all hell's going to break loose. So it might be that he's found that. For someone who skis out as much as he does, he's doing well to hang on to that kind of top seed start number. He's clearly got enough results over the past few years that he's not dropping back like we talk about with other people. So he is fortunate in that respect that, despite the skiing out, when he does put it in the finish, it's generally a podium, which keeps him in that top group, which means he can take more risks. Whereas other people, like you talked about with Strolz, he had a season of brilliance, but unfortunately the season of brilliance has kind of worn off on the WCSL, and now it's just he's got a lot of 15ths and 16ths and is struggling to get back into that form he was in pre-Olympics. And I hope he gets it back, because when he gets it right, he's a really good skier. But I think Strolz is probably one of the people that has suffered a little bit from the conditions this year. Like, I can't think of how many slaloms we've had where the conditions have been just perfect slalom conditions. Yeah. Like, even the night race in Schladming was snowy and slushy as hell after that bulletproof ice on the GS night. It was then quite warm on the slalom night, wasn't it? Like,
Kitzbühel was bulletproof, wasn't it? That was mega hard. And then Wengen was pretty hard, which we hadn't seen for a long time. But yeah, I think it's given away. I just don't think he could have afforded to have another season like he had last year, which saw him, DNF in virtually everything, and therefore just plummet, absolutely plummet like a stone out of the top group. And I think if he'd done that this year, he may never come back. Whereas this year, it's because he's maybe just dialed it back and is skiing within himself, feels like maybe that is like a building block, get established within the top 30 again. And then all of a sudden, that's what is going to be maybe the difference between him. He won't win this year. I really don't think he will, or even podium this year. But this could be like the perfect way to make the summer really good, and then to start next season with a bib in the 20, the teens or the 20s from, in that next part from 15 to 30, and go, I'm back. I've got some confidence. I've got some stability. Let's turn it back up again.
And needs to have a chat with Jakobsen and find out what he's done, because he's gone from looking like he was every run all or nothing, pedal to the metal, DNF 9 times out of 10, to now looking like he's not even trying and being quicker than he was when he was trying really hard. Skier the last like month has just been ridiculous to watch. I'm now at the point where I'm looking at him going, I can't see where he's generating the speed anymore. Everything is so calm in his body. He looks more like Strasser than ever been, like than any of his old technique. He's just calmed everything down.
Yeah,
and it is rapid.
It's really cool to see, because it's again one of those things. Sorry, it's again one of those things where you go, you see these really fast, talented athletes. A bit like a Vinatsa or Clement Noël, maybe, but probably to a lesser extent because he has had the highs. But these guys that really are super, super talented, but aren't able to show it ever, or very, very rarely. And even if you do see it, you don't see it over two runs. You maybe see it over one run, and maybe disappear out of their career without ever putting it together. And I think Jakobsen, because I think actually he's relatively old, I think, isn't he? Have a quick, whilst you're tapping away, where I think he's like one of those. You could have easily never seen the best from Jakobsen because he made too many mistakes. And we're in, I think Vinatsa's probably in a little bit in that bracket at the moment as well, that you may never see the best of him because he can't find his feet. Yeah, 29, thank you. So I'm really pleased that he's worked out a way to use his talent and use his speed to produce results on the podium and be 0.4 off a win and less than 0.2 or 1/1500ths off a second place again.
Yeah, I mean, it's and like I said, it's like the thing that's most interesting is with some people, you they have the same technique, but you can see them just dialing it back and putting less in. Obviously, I don't think his fundamental techniques changed, but his style has changed, and that's the bit that's most impressive about it. Like I said, like watching him skiing out, I'm like, oh, it looks like Strauss when he's skiing, as opposed to like I think the maybe it's like a Swedish thing. I'm trying to think of Mura was quite an aggressive racer,
Which is
but
power,
was
wasn't it? It was all power driving.
yeah, and I feel like perhaps having that as your template as an international athlete growing up, maybe that's what got him into that mold previously. But it's certainly whatever he's doing now is working. I really hope he can get like a podium in either the weekend or World Cup finals. I think that'll be perfect for him going into next year, just to reinforce everything he's done in the last month.
Yeah, certainly is. It's ramping up really nicely this season, sort of playing out nicely. Being back in North America, yes, I know that we talked that there's some stuff in the press at the moment talking about, being back in the States for a second time, but the men never went. This is only the men. Oh, the men did go again, but going back to go again and all of this stuff in this right time of year, I think it's it's. I'm really pleased that we're here. Yes, maybe. For the planet, it would be better if we could go back once and rather than having to do two separate trips for the men. But at the same time, we're trying to create a global tour. And it's not, and we've spoken about it before, it's not as easy as just going, right, well, we'll just make all of the American ones through this or the North American ones through this period and we'll make all of the Austrian ones at this period and make all it then just doesn't flow as a tour properly. And obviously, you've got these iconic weekends that the iconic places aren't going to give up. Yes, a bit of a shame, but I think I'm so pleased we're there because I think Palisades Tahoe put on a really good event. The piece looked immaculate. There was loads of people in the crowd. The atmosphere looked really good because sometimes you fear, again, with the stuff that you read about, American ski racing and ski racing in North America maybe isn't as popular as it could be, and there's not as huge fan base as there should be because our sport is wicked, but. I was really pleased to see the packed grandstands, lots of cheering, lots of, appreciation for the athletes from start to finish. I thought it was really, really, really good. And I hope and I expect to see the same in Aspen. So I'm really looking forward to being there for another weekend.
Only negative, if you're listening, Palisades, no giant inflatable stuff floating around. What's that all about?
Come on, it's supposed to be bigger and better in North America, isn't it? It's supposed to be how it's been.
Exactly. But no, like you said, the crowd sounded awesome. That everyone there, that they were having a great time. It wasn't just support for Americans. People were supporting. Like everyone clearly had their like favorite races on the tour.
Yeah,
A
because they
bunch of
looked
the.
like they'd supplied everybody with banners and little like rollout sort of
Yeah,
name
the
badges or
names for
whatever.
all of that for yeah, and I think a couple of the actual fan clubs that like they travelled as well. So amazing support, and that's what you want. You don't want to turn on a World Cup race. Yes, we're there to watch the skiing, but you don't want to pan around. It just reminds you of COVID sometimes when they pan around the finish area and there's like a handful of people. So you need to be making
Some
sure.
relatives in the crowd.
A few people's mum just clapping along. But you want to make sure everyone can get to the races that wants to go and see them and has a great time when they're there. And like you said, they put on a great show. And hopefully, yeah, it's something we can have some more of. Let's do it.
Well, we are in North America for the men's side of things over in Aspen for the double GS and slalom. So we're racing GS Friday, Saturday, and slalom on Sunday. The women are over in Kvitfjell in Norway for speed action. They are racing downhill and super G. And let's see if the Norwegians, certainly if Ragnhild Mowinckel can finish off her career with a home podium, which would be pretty epic. Ben, do you want to start putting some picks in?
Yeah, let's do it. The G men's GS, it's very like who's who for the not Odomat. Everyone else is kind of much of a muchness, really, aren't
Yeah,
they?
I think every there's so many, there's not many people have had more than Two podiums.
it's also trying to work out who's kind of found something on that snow. I think I'll just do let's be sensible for the first one. Let's go Zubcic.
You're going to go to, I might have to go Henrik Kristoffersen, you know. I feel like it's a little bit dangerous because he's probably going to totally rip up his whatever he had setup wise.
That works so well. I'm going to change it.
Yeah, it's like, well, I found something really, really good, but it wasn't quite good enough. So that one is going in the bin. Let's go back to
How
start
do I find these 1200s? Right, this
again.
time I'm going to mount my boots right on the back of the skis.
And do them backwards. I'm going to put the heel piece at the front, the toe piece at the back. I'm going to sharpen my skis with butter.
Revolutionary.
So yeah, I feel like that's a little bit dangerous, but the dude was on fire in thingy, so I've got to go with him.
Go on then, second one. Who are you going
Who
for?
did you say for us, Kranich or
I said Subchich.
Zubcic? Do I think this is, you know what, Ben? I find this really hard, as
You're
usual.
just looking down a bunch of people with
Can I go
no.
back? Can I go back to calling a nation?
Maybe. Give
I
it
haven't
again.
picked a whole nation for a really long time.
It
I used to be my I used to be my
used to be a
go
calling card on a
I
weekly
used to be my
basis.
go-to move. Do I think River's going to do it again? I think I. Oh no! Oh no! No, I don't think he is. No, Verdu's sacked it off because of his back again. I don't think McGrath is going to do it. Don't think. Tumler will do it. I don't think Mayar's going to do it. I don't think Feller's going to do it either. Maybe Steen Olsen. Steen Olsen, because I feel like he's got a little bit of a point to prove after not going quite so well as he would have wanted to in where he picked up his first World Cup win. So I think maybe he's going to go right. I'm going
Fair
to take
enough.
it.
I had actually already written down Radamus
Oh, did you? You just didn't think I was
the
going to pick
second
him.
one. I'm not using my first bit. So when you, yeah. So if you turned out and then picked him, I'd have been like, oh, I'm not gonna have to change it. But yeah, I think ride that high. Let's see it. Obviously, hopefully, knows the snow, knows the hill, and bring some of those good vibes and speed from last week.
You think he's going to dial it in on the day one and then absolutely smash it and pick up his first victory on day two?
I just didn't have the stones to pick that wild and outsider when I'm
The
picking
race one.
first.
Fair
So I put
enough.
it down second.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, over to slalom, and yeah, I think it's going to be tough, but I am. Oh, do I? Oh,
Do you trust Noel? That's the
that's what I was about. I was like, Noel or Haugen?
question.
Noel or Haugen? Noel or Haugen?
You don't want to pick Crazy Manny.
No, because I
Is
feel like
he?
he's risked too much now, and he's the gap's getting even
Yeah,
bigger. Like I didn't think he was going to risk it on the in Palisades. I don't think he's definitely not going to risk it in Aspen. Jesus. So I'm going to go. Oh, do I want to go Clément Noël? Yeah. No.
you sure?
No.
Good call. Part of me wants to say Strasser, but I'm not sure after that second run last week. It kind of scared me a bit. Even though still it was fine, it just wasn't close out the race good, which is what you're gonna need. I'll stick with Crazy Manny. He's been racking up the points for me.
You would. You would. The most consistent man on World Cup, there.
Oh, the pair of you and Marcel. I say that one more time on TV and start throwing stuff at the telly. Most consistent person on a World Cup tour is a guy who hasn't been beaten in a single race all season. Manny is much more consistent than he used to be. He's not the most consistent man on
Barring Odomat, he's the most consistent man on
the
tour.
tour. He's getting that way. He's getting there.
No, he's
He's
not getting
definitely
there. He is.
he's getting
He is.
there.
You can guarantee I'm going to say it as often as I possibly can this next week.
Yeah,
I'm
because
going
people
to even
start
call him that in
complaining to
BS.
Eurosport, and they'll be like, right, Discovery Plus. fire this guy. He keeps saying consistent too much.
He's run out of words. I get bonus when I say
His
consistency, by the way.
vocabulary has shrunk
Yeah,
tremendously.
I consistently every time he's on. Okay, downhill over in Kvitfjell for the women.
Let's go with one of the Austrians, but which one? They're both pretty close. Veneer and Hooter, there's only 4 points between them in the standings. Let's go Veneer. She's been flying recently.
I'm going to go Mo. I'm going to go Ragnhild, Mo Winkle.
Oh, we're going for the sign-off win.
Yeah. And then in race two, Gooparami.
What's the hill? What's the hill? I know we only watched it like a week ago for the men.
For them, it's high speed. For the men, it's one of the easier tracks on the course, good for gliding normally for the men. On the women's side, the bottom is a little bit more intimidating than some of the stuff that they would have, but it's not as hard as it's, I think it's easier than,
I was thinking
I think it's
about
easier than
Bassino after
Cortina.
that. I'm thinking after the speed we saw from Bassino, maybe her, but don't know what, how much of that was just home snow kind of vibes or home hills.
Yeah.
I might just
I
play it a
think.
bit more safe and go with the other of the Austrians and go with Hooter for the second day.
You think, you don't think Brignone?
They're close at the moment, aren't they? Brignone, I'm trying to think if she's. She's, I don't know, she's just let me down a bunch. Ever since I said she was going to be my new Tessa Worley, she's let me down loads. She obviously can't handle the pressure the same way Tessa could. She clearly found out and it's bothering her. I'm cursed. Not the only person not injured is the person I've said I'm going to keep picking. No, I'm going to go Hooter. I'm going to save Brignone for the GSs.
Well, if Hooter wins, then she becomes the Super G Globe winner. So, that'll keep the Austrians happy.
Which would be incredible for her because she those issues with like concussion and injury the last few years as well. So to be able to come back and have that full like season of consistent results and picking up wins to the point where you're getting a globe would be really good for her.
Yeah.
You know, there was points a couple of seasons ago where she said some days where she was in a tuck, she started getting dizzy. So it's really shows that she's come a long way from that, and also shows the kind of things that these racers put themselves through to live these dreams. He would talk about a lot of the injuries and stuff. She's been one of the more vocal about how much it puts her off at times. But yeah, I hope she can get that victory and take that the globe. Obviously, Lara Gooparami has done everything to deserve it as well, but just feel like Hooter would be one to really be a good win for her if she can get it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Gooparami, from an underdog perspective, and I know we Brits love an underdog, you'd say it probably hasn't been, Conny Hooter, probably a little bit more of an underdog. It's so tight. The women's Super G is absolutely so tight with Hooter 5 points, Brignone 34 points behind, and Stephanie Vanier 94 points behind. So it's pretty epically close and lovely sort of come towards the end of the season. So everything else on the line, they're gonna have to deal with an absolute truckload of pressure trying to deal with this one, because it is it's not going to be easy to hold your mettle and hold your nerve as well, because like I just said, like it is a tough speed race. The speeds are high, pressure on the pressure through the body is really good.
And if in similar in the downhill, if Lara Gooparami doesn't have a good weekend or a good day in the downhill, and Veneer or Hooter win, then going into World Cup finals, that then gets a lot closer as well. Obviously, it involves Lara Gooparami not having a dominant weekend in the downhill. But if she has one off day, Veneer and Hooter could really close the gap and make the World Cup finals downhill a really fun one as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, we said before we like things going to the World Cup finals, but when people are just dominating all season the way, Odermatt has done,
That's its own story, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you need it to be its own story. So yeah, I'm glad that there's this many things going down to the wire.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Still no Shiffrin. I'm not expecting to see her back. I think her goal, her aim at the moment, anyway, is still Ara, which is the following weekend than this one. So it's an opportunity. What the overall separate is, Gutbrami Brami leads the overall by 205 points, I think it is. So, which would have been massively gutting for Gutbrami Brami that we didn't manage to get those races in Italy, in Val di Fassa for the women. So Shiffrin had a little, although I think it's quite obvious that Shiffrin's not really targeting, and she's sort of looking at a longer game plan, not trying to rush back to try and pick up globes. But it does play into her hands that there's more opportunity if Gutbrami Brami falters, which she'd probably have to do, at least one DNF probably would give Shiffrin a chance to come back and nail a couple of races. But she'd have to nail them straight off the bat, which stranger
Yeah,
things have
you
happened.
would think
But
two podiums or would see Gubrami through, or maybe not mathematically, because you could say Shiffrin could win every race at World Cup finals, but I don't know that she'll ski the speed events after just having a crash and coming back from it. She'd have to really want it for that.
Gutbrami's Brami's no slouch. Gutbrami's pushed her all the way by right and by skill in the GS. So it's not like Gutbrami's Brami's only picking up big points in GS because Shiffrin's not there. So,
Yeah, definitely the GS will be an interesting one to see as well in the next couple of weeks, and see if Lara Gubrami does enough to effectively wrap up the overall. Will she then put her feet up, or will she want to, win as much as possible in those closing weeks of the season?
plenty of stories left to go, even though we're coming towards the run-in for 2024. Ben, thank you very much. It's been like old times, my friend. Just you and me, that back in the old days. I've enjoyed it. Nice one. Thanks, Betty. Till next time. Bye for now.